Everybody, thanks for listening to a podcast from beyond where we have gone beyond horror. All right. So are you looking forward to, Donald Trump being arrested? I guess it's going to be tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I'm curious to see what sort of spectacle it's going to be. I mean, hopefully this will be the first of many. It's a crazy time we're living through. And the fact that there are still people that are so ridiculously enthusiastic about him. I don't know. I mean, you would think even if you liked him or you believed in his philosophy, whatever that philosophy is, other than stealing everything, you would still say, once you've been indicted and once you get two or three other indictments likely, you're probably not really in a position to be running for president again.
Yeah.
But according to him, it's going to make his followers even more enthusiastic.
Probably, yeah.
I think for him and Ron DeSantis, the big problem really is that they have only appealed to that tiny group of people, of crazy haters and, Nazi-esque type folks. They made no effort to try to reach out to anybody else. I suppose in DeSantis's case, he might say, well, I'm waiting until I get the Republican nomination, and then I'll move a little more towards the center. But when you go so far to the extreme, you make yourself so hated, when you harm so many people with the things you say and do, what possibility is there of trying to get back to the center then, I mean, in the past, it used to be the candidates would try to appear a little more liberal, a little more conservative to get the nomination, and then they would tack back to the center to get the independence,
Right.
But these guys, they're out of control, I mean, it's just absolutely obscene. How are they ever going to get back to the center? How are they ever going to win over independence? It's a mystery to me. I don't know.
I don't think they will.
Hopefully not. I mean, the big disadvantage, I guess, Biden has is his age.
Yeah.
Because I think generally speaking, he's done a pretty decent job considering what he was handed. But there are a lot of people that are suspicious of anybody who is going to be in his
80s,
late 80s, mid to late 80s when he ends his second term. I don't know. I know we had Ronald Reagan well past the point where he could make a coherent sentence.
Right.
So people didn't seem to mind that. And then we had Donald Trump, who never was able to make a coherent sentence. Biden really is, it's a difficult thing for him, because the problem with the Democrats is that, unlike the Republicans, the Democrats will sort of form the circular firing squad. They did it with Hillary Clinton, right? I mean, there were so many people that some folks maybe just didn't come out to vote because they were sure she was going to win.
Yeah.
Didn't want to bother her. They didn't like her. So they figured, well, she's going to win anyway. I don't need to bother. Big mistake. But there were other people, too, that would say, I'd only vote for Jill Stein. First opportunity to get a woman, a pretty liberal, somebody who was painted as a sort of wild-eyed, crazy liberal by Republicans. First opportunity to get a woman like that into the White House, and the people that claim to be liberals and progressives say, I would never vote for her. She's a murderer and she's a warmonger. And it seems to me that they're just as absurd in their positions on her as the folks on the far right were. And at least the folks on the far right, you could say they were making money because they had a little industry writing books and, running TV shows about what horrors the Clintons had been, how many people they had assassinated. And all that But the other aspect may be that there are a lot of progressives, men and women, who really never want to see a woman in the White House.
Right.
And it may be because for the men, it may be because they really don't want to see a woman in the White House. But for the women, it may be they realize that if they a woman gets into the White House, then she's suddenly going to have to own all these problems, and she's going to have to do things that they may not be able to support, like going to war.
Right.
And so it's sort of like the women that you might speak to, and I guess I speak as a liberal and as a person who considers himself a progressive, but sometimes on issues like the draft, you might say, well, we're living in an era when we're supposed to be treating everyone equally, the sexes are supposed to be regarded equally. Why should men have to sign up for the draft, as we still have a registration, at least, for the Selective Service, but women don't have to?
All right.
Is that fair? Why should we automatically assume that men can go and die in a war, but women must be protected? Now, personally, I think probably that's the best arrangement. But feminists are supposed to believe that women can do any job a man can do.
Yeah.
So why would we have this apparent inequity in our law? And some progressive women would say, well, how about just not having a war?
Yeah,
but that's sort of getting around. The real question is, why, if we have a war, would we only send men to say, well, let's not have wars? Getting around the whole issue. It's avoiding the real issue. I don't know how this relates to whether or not I'll be celebrating when Donald Trump is invited. But I think Joe Biden, if I was going to guess, I would say probably will win re-election, because I just can't imagine massive numbers going out and voting either for a guy who's been indicted and a guy who's apparently selling classified top secret information to foreign powers, which is, we'll be hearing more about that in the coming weeks, I'm sure, and coming months. But I can't imagine them voting for Ron DeSantis either, because he doesn't have a broad base. It's unlikely he'd ever be able to develop any sort of coalition of people willing to vote for him. And he's kind of a rat-like, creepy, ugly. I mean, he's not as physically ugly as Donald Trump, obviously.
Right, yeah.
Donald Trump is like a circus clown. But Ron DeSantis is certainly not somebody that you could look at and say, here's our next John Kennedy, right? He's this short, rodent-like creature. So I can't see people being that thrilled by him. And of course, when he gets into the actual process of running for president, I'm sure he's going to make a lot of mistakes, because he's never been on the national, on the national scene. He's always been a fairly, local guy. I don't know what's going on in Florida,
I have no idea.
It's amazing to me. I don't know why people down there would want a guy like that as their elected official, as their top elected official.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll see what happens. As long as Donald Trump never gets near the White House again, I'll be happy. I don't ask for much. But how about you? Are you looking forward? Are you going to be glued to? Well, you'll be working, right?
I guess it depends on what time it happens. I may be at work. I don't know. Well, I'm actually off tomorrow, so.
Oh, okay. Well, you can.
I'll probably be rewiring outlets as it's happening. So.
Well, that's an appropriate.
Make sure I leave the TV on.
Yes. Rewire one outlet and plug in a TV.
Yeah.
Well, we're never going to see the end of it if there's actually any footage of him being taken in and out of the place. I'm sure we'll see that repeated endlessly.
Oh, yeah.
And there'll be endless talk about what it all means, even though I guess they're only going to be releasing the specific charges tomorrow, right?
During the indictment or whatever they call it.
They unseal the indictment, I guess, on the same day when he comes in. So, we've had how long has it been? A full week since the indictment? Four or five days at least, I guess.
Yeah.
And there's been 24-hour discussion about all the ramifications, even before we know what the charges are.
Yeah.
So that's the way things work these days, I guess.
Yeah, that's how your 24-hour news cycle works.
Yeah.
Have anything, so we're just going to speculate for 10 constant, hours straight.
constant speculation, and all the old, the old things that we've heard a dozen times before, like, oh, this time they got him. This is the breaking.
Yeah.
This, you know. I mean, they've been predicting his downfall now practically as long as he's been on the national scene. Yeah. And it never seems to happen. But this time does feel a little different because it is an actual indictment. I mean, it's kind of hard to explain that away on your resume. And if it is followed by additional ones, then he's really going to be stretched pretty thin, right?
Oh, yeah. Plus, I'd heard that, they're saying that the judge is probably going to put a gag order on everybody.
Right.
And we all know he's not going to be able to not talk about it.
He better be careful because, this is a different world. I mean, it's not like he's used to a sort of situation where as a candidate and as the president, he could pretty much say anything he wanted, no matter who he offended. There's no law that says you can't be obnoxious and talk like an asshole. Good thing, because I probably would be in prison a long time ago. But this is a different thing. You could conceivably end up in jail or maybe being fined. Last thing he wants with the law bill, or legal bills that he's running up, would be to have enormous fines coming in. And if he can't learn to keep his mouth shut at this trial, and this is the, as they say, this is the weakest case. I wouldn't put it that way.
Yeah, this is just
the least of the cases that are against him, least severe. If he can't shut up about this, then what's going to happen when he's being tried as a traitor? Selling classified documents or trying to overthrow the government. If he can't shut up on this one, then he's going to have a hard time. I think if his family cares at all about his future, maybe they should put something in his Coke or his Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Try to knock him out for a while, you know.
Put something in his Big Mac.
Yes. I feel a tremendous amount of stress these past few years, and it's affected my health to a certain extent. And I think the reign of insanity with Donald Trump and the other crazy people that we see around the country has definitely worn me down. But what can you do, right?
Yeah.
And it'll all come to an end at some point. It's just what I feel sorry for is all those folks, all those innocent people in Ukraine that ended up having their lives destroyed, either having their jobs and their homes destroyed or actually being killed.
Killed, yeah.
Losing their children just because Putin thought that he had accomplished enough during the Trump years of destroying NATO and breaking up, our country, creating division in our country, and of course installing a stooge of his in the White House, that he felt that he could go ahead, even though Biden beat him. And the second time he felt, well, I've done enough. I can go ahead with my plans. And if Trump had never been president, maybe he never would have done that.
Would have done, yeah.
No. I can sort of feel, I can understand why he would have felt like, I'm really on a roll. I managed to install the president of the United States. And he had quite a few successes there for quite a while. And it was beginning to look like he'd go down as one of the cleverest operators on the world scene that we had during this period of time, pretty much getting whatever he wants, silencing all the critics, setting himself up as one of the wealthiest men in the world, and doing it all without really mobilizing and going, full to a full out war position. But now he doesn't look very clever at all. Now he looks like a terrible fool. He's basically destroyed his country. I mean, even if he has some success in Ukraine at this late stage, nobody's ever going to say, oh, yeah, that was a great idea.
Yeah.
Because this country is going to be a pariah state for decades to come.
Yeah. He would have been a good Bond villain.
He would have been, yes. I remember Joe Biden talking about meeting Putin at one point. And I forget who it was that was talking at the time about how, oh, it was George Bush, actually. He said that when he met with Putin he sort of looked into his eyes and he could see his soul or something like that.
Yeah.
And Biden said, when I looked into his eyes, I didn't see any soul. And Putin said, we understand each other. So yeah. That is a very Bondian villain. But the truth, the sadness of it is that there are people, real people that are being destroyed, you know, innocent people that are being murdered and tortured and kidnapped.
Right.
And the country, city after city being destroyed. So that's a horror, you know, that's the worst thing we've seen. It's not on the level of the Second World War. It's not on the level of the Holocaust, but it's the worst we've seen since then, I think.
Yeah.
And if he succeeds to any extent, then we're going to be facing more of this going forward. It's not going to end. So Donald Trump's presidency brought a lot of bad things to the world.
Oh, yeah.
And the liberals that voted for Jill Stein have a lot to answer for. But anyway. So what else? What's good in the movies? Or is there anything you've seen or anything you can recommend? I'm too busy.
I don't think I've really seen anything. I did start watching a show on HBO called Glow. It's a Mark Maron. You know who Mark Maron is?
No, I don't think
he's
so.
He's a comedian. Now he's like a famous podcaster. Anyways, oh, he's the like guy a, that does the,
yeah, I think I know that. Yes, I know.
Yeah.
Yes.
He plays like a direct movie director in the 80s whose, you know, career's fallen off. So he's hired to do a women's wrestling show. Takes place there. It's pretty good. I'm getting into that.
Oh, Glow. Yes. Wasn't that the name of one? What was it? The League or? League of Women Wrestlers or something like that.
Yeah, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. Yeah. Well, that sounds fun. That certainly is escapism, right? Women's wrestling is wrestling generally is escapism.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was pretty good. I haven't watched any movies or anything lately.
Yeah, I can't think of anything I've watched lately either, other than those terrible Bulldog Drummond movies.
I did get this. You probably saw a picture of it, but I'm gonna start working on this.
Oh, is that
it's one? It's a model kit.
Model kit. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Is that like one of the original ones that they made back when? Because that looks like a Wrath of Khan.
It's a Wrath of Khan model. I mean, it's a newer.
So this is a new release.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, Carrie. All the years I probably took off of my life from inhaling airplane glue and Whiskers paint, making models like that when I was a kid. I must have had the original Enterprise model that company, AMT, I think it was.
Yeah.
I had such a great success with that Enterprise model. I must have made that 4 times because every time I built it, it would fall apart.
Yeah.
I always put too much glue on the little, what do they call those things, the pod things.
Yeah,
and the weight would eventually, because you know, with the model glue, it basically dissolved the surface of the plastic, and the idea was to put a little bit on each surface, and then it sort of welds the plastic together.
Right.
And I would just sort of, you know, put a big load of it on, the whole thing would dissolve, and then the weight would cause the parts to sort of fall in funny directions. So I went through a lot of Enterprises in my life.
Yeah.
And I think I'll give it a break now. I've destroyed too many Enterprises.
Yeah. I hadn't done a model since I was a kid, and we got these in the store. I was like, well, let me go and snatch one up and try to put one together. So.
Yeah, I find sometimes that I haven't done it for years, but in the most recent time I've done it, I found it kind of restful and, you know, to focus on something like that, you know, and you can put other things out of your mind. So it's kind of fun. I have a friend who's seeing all these really elaborate Ray Harryhausen monster model kits that they're putting out nowadays. They're vinyl kits, so they're not as difficult to make as those plastic kits. But he's seen some of the model kits that I made back when I was a kid, like the Aurora models and the way I painted them. And he wanted to send me these and have me make them. I thought to myself, I don't know what sort of trouble you're getting yourself into. I might make a hash of this, but. But they are making some pretty impressive models. I mean, I don't know if it's materials they're using or just that they're putting more time and effort into it, but they're amazingly accurate.
Yeah, this one here is not that's not made to have lights in it, but I think I'm going to attempt to put lights in it.
Oh, that's why you're the guy for that,
I've
right?
Because I've got some LEDs and stuff I can throw in there.
Well, that would be cool, yeah.
So,
and the next step, you could start making your own Star Trek fan film.
There you go, yeah.
I think you're required to if you actually build the Enterprise. It must be used in some way.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned this during the show. I actually picked this. I'm going to go on a reading.
Oh, The Big Sleep, reading. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So you actually mentioned that one. So I'm going to.
Yes, I have multiple editions of The Big Sleep and all of his, I think all of Raymond Chandler's writing.
Yeah.
Him and Dashiell Hammett. Dashiell, I just read for the first time one of Dashiell Hammett's books that I hadn't read before, Red Harvest. And when I was a kid, and forgive me if I'm repeating myself because I frequently repeat myself, a very small repertoire of material, but Red Harvest was one of Dashiell Hammett's Continental Op books. He had a character that didn't have a name. It was called the Continental Op. He was an operative for the Continental, a private detective company.
Right.
And I thought this was a fantastic book. I read it like last summer. And I just went through it, you know, it was really impressive. And it was that completely captured the flavor of that time of like 1930s detective stories and crime stories that you really just don't see anymore, you know. So I would definitely recommend that. Dashiell Hammett wrote a couple of other great books. He wrote The Thin Man, of course, and he wrote The Maltese Falcon. Better than that. But I have to admit, I think this one has emerged as my favorite of his. It's a really very good writing.
Right.
These guys knew what they were doing when they wrote stuff. It wasn't just it wasn't like Mickey Spillane. I mean, Mickey Spillane, some people might like his stuff, but there's a wit, there's an intelligence basically to Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett's writing that I don't think you're going to find in Mickey Spillane's stuff.
Yeah. But, I'm currently reading On the Road.
I know you mentioned that.
Kerouac. That's really good. I'm enjoying it so far. And then also picked up The Lottery.
Oh yeah, Shirley Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, I think it's a short story. So this is I think this is The Lottery with other.
Yes,
there's other of her stories that are in there.
There's quite a few good stories in there.
Yeah.
Haunting of Hill House, and We Have Always Lived in the Castle. I definitely recommend those by her.
Right.
We Have Always Lived in the Castle is one of these books that is. I don't know how to describe it. It's almost embarrassing to read. It's so intimate. You get so deeply into the mind of the characters, into the main character.
Yeah.
That it's almost a little troubling to read. And it's about troubled people. So I guess that's
right. Yeah.
That's an excellent book. And Haunting of Hill House, of course, they made the movie.
The movie, yeah.
The Haunting from that. And that's a terrific read.
I picked this. I got The Metamorphosis also because I never read it before, but I was reading about it and it seemed like a really good, interesting story. But I didn't realize at the time when I bought it that it's actually a graphic novel.
Oh, it's a graphic novel version. Yeah. I was wondering who the other name was. I was expecting to see Kafka, but who was the other? Yeah. Is that the artist name on the bottom?
Adapted by Peter Cooper.
I've not read a lot of Kafka, but I'm certainly familiar with his reputation and his the ideas in his books. Maybe sometime before I die, I'll get to him. And there's a whole bunch of other authors I probably should read rather than rereading James Bond novels.
Yeah.
But
on the road, I'm really enjoying that one. Of course, I told you it reminded me of The Rum Diaries by Hunter S. Thompson. That's a good one.
Yeah, that sort of makes sense. They're sort of similar characters, right?
Yeah.
I'm more familiar with some of those writers. I'm more familiar with them as people than, you know, from seeing them in interviews on TV shows.
Yeah.
Or things that were made about stories, you know, films that were made about their lives. I find that time and that crowd of writers to be fascinating, but I haven't really found it myself yet to seek out their books. I don't know if they have anything to offer me, but you know, I'm hopefully not going to die next week. So
right.
I have a few years ahead of me and I need something to read. So
right.
I'll save that and Ulysses and and the Finnegan's Wake for my later years, if my vision holds up.
See
if I still have eyeballs at the time.
There was another book I read a couple of years ago, but I can't remember the author now, but it was As I Lie Dying.
Is it a mystery type thing or a thriller?
No, it was this guy's building his mom's coffin as she's on her deathbed.
Oh, wow. That sounds uplifting.
Yeah. I'll have to dig that one out.
Sounds intriguing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, mortality, I don't know. As I get older, I don't know how much time I want to spend reading about dying.
Yeah.
But I'm going to see how life affects me. Maybe as once you get past a certain point and you realize that you're not going to immediately die,
right,
you may have another 10 or 20 years ahead of you, then maybe you can relax and start reading new stuff and taking on new projects. But right now I'm in the process of trying to figure out whether I'm going to have any any great length of time ahead of me.
Yeah, I've kind of figured out that the older you get, the way I look at it is the older you get, the less you fear death. You're just like, if it happens, it happens. You know what I'm saying?
I'm waiting.
When you're younger, you're like, well, I don't want to die this young. You know, the older you get, you're just like, if it happens.
But when you're younger, you never think you will die.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like the end of summer vacation. When at the beginning of summer vacation, you never, it's like, oh, that's months
away. Oh, yeah.
And then suddenly it seems like in a blink of an eye, you're facing going back to school the next day.
Yeah.
Life is kind of like that. You think, I'm never going to get old. I'm never going to get sick. And I'm certainly never going to die. I'm going to be the one that doesn't die.
Yeah.
Suddenly you start to see your parts falling off. And you say, oh, yeah, I'm old. I may not make it to this one, you know.
Yeah.
Or I may get so sick that I don't want to make it. You
know? Yeah, I've been that way, yeah. I cut the grass today for the first time this year, and I was like, well, that's it.
You did what?
Well, cut the grass.
Yeah, the grass.
Mow the lawn.
Oh, okay. Well, how did you manage to get through life up to this point without cutting grass?
No, so that was the first time I've done it this year.
Oh, this year, okay.
Yeah, and it's like... And it's just like, okay, I can just lay down and die now. That's all. Yeah.
Well, you're sort of going in you're entering into a new phase of your life. It's sort of an adventure, and you got a lot to look forward to. So you certainly shouldn't be thinking of death, at least not your death. It might be fun to consider other people's deaths.
Yeah.
I'm going through a period right now where, my parents died. When my parents were my age, they were dead.
Yeah.
And I remember them in the last few years before they got to my age, and they were quite sick and decrepit. They really looked like old people. So we're, my generation definitely did something right. You know, I don't feel like I know I don't look like a youth, but I don't feel quite as decrepit as they looked and felt.
Right. Yeah.
They seemed to give up at a certain point. You know, my parents were the sort of folks that talked about being old when they got into their 40s. They were sort of people that would draw attention to the fact that every time they bent over for something, they'd make that noise that old people make.
Yeah.
But the truth, I think, is that when you get into that frame of mind, it sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Because you stop doing new things, you stop pursuing, following your bliss, as I forget who it was that said that, Joseph Campbell, maybe. Maybe it was Leo Biscaglia. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, you stop doing things that make you want to live. You stop doing things that excite you. I mean, I had a little bit of a health emergency over the past couple of days, and still not really resolved. It involves my eye. And there's, some question as to whether or not I'm going to keep the vision in that eye, even at this point. And I thought, well, let's do the show tonight.
Yeah.
I need to get my mind off of these things. I need to focus on something that isn't about getting old and getting sick. So I think that's what people need. I think you really need to have a project, you know. It's also true for folks that suffer from, as everybody seems to these days, suffer from addiction to different things, you know, substance abuse. Yeah. And so often I've heard people that I know who have substance abuse problems say, you know, what am I going to do if I am able to stop? What am I, what's life going to be like afterwards? And you realize, and I went through this myself when I was drinking, I stopped drinking about 20 years ago, but I realized that, or I felt at least at the time, that there wouldn't be anything, there wouldn't be any life without booze. And so you really do need something else in your life. You need something to work on, some project to focus on, other than just, you know, keeping your career as a drunk going.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of folks, if they've had long substance abuse problems, if they've been an alcoholic for many years or they've been a drug addict for many years, their whole life is about managing all the pleasures and all the horrors of that type of existence.
Yeah, it's hard for them to get back to some kind of normal life.
They can't go back to being themselves because that person doesn't exist anymore. It's wiped away, right? So they face the problem of developing a whole new life, maybe in their 40s or 50s or later, and that's really hard to do. So I think one of the reasons I stopped drinking right in the middle of shooting that movie that you showed last night, and I don't know how I was successful in stopping drinking, because I tried many times before. I was drinking from high school up until the age of 40. And then one night I came home and it was right in the middle when we had shut down on the production because we had run out of money, and I knew we were going to be, when we went back into production, I was pretty much going to be doing everything because we had dismissed the crew. And I took a look at myself in the mirror and I said, no way I'm going to survive this if I keep drinking, you know, because I could see the effects of the alcohol on my face.
Yeah.
And so I just took all my six pack of beer and I went to the sink and I opened them, each one and poured it out. And that was it. And somehow that time it took.
Right.
You know, I didn't feel the need, and I never felt the need since. But if I didn't have something that I wanted to do, if I didn't have something I was trying to accomplish, then I probably would have just drank the beer.
Yeah.
You need something to give your life some sort of direction or purpose or meaning, you know?
Right.
And of course, a lot of people would say, well, if making that fucking movie was what you lived for, then, you know, you shouldn't have bothered. But I think that's a little harsh. Yeah. Whatever it is, no matter how trivial it is, if it's important to you and it's something that you can focus your attention on, your creative energy on, it's a good thing.
Yep.
So that's the end of my sermon.
All right. Well, I guess I better go ahead and wrap this one up. This was a gun. We haven't done this in a long time though. So
yeah, well, it's, what was the last? It's
been
one?
A while.
A couple, it was January, right, when we did Time Machine.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, hopefully we can get back into the swing and do.
Oh yeah.
More frequently.
Yeah, we will now. I got a new schedule at work, so we should be good now.
Oh, that's good. You'd be working in the days.
Yeah.
No, that's
working
cool.
five to two.
Oh, it's very.
Getting up at 3:30 in the morning is taking it out of me.
Yeah, I can see the downside to that, but you get out of two, so that's great.
Oh yeah, got the evenings to do everything. So.
All the summer evenings ahead, that'll be kind of nice.
Oh yeah.
Well, we have to think of something else that we can talk about. So I'll put some thought into that and let you know what I can suggest.
All right, we can do that.
All right, great. Good seeing you again.
You too.
Have a good night.